following program is made possible by a grant from the Wisconsin Humanities Committee, with funding provided by the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Most of the work on the farm was done by hand, them days. You see, there was no tractors, nothing, just horses. And you had to do everything by hand. Yeah, it wasn't easy.
Oh, my mother worked hard, you know, as all farm women did. She just worked from morning till night. But I think she was happy in doing it. She expected to do that.
It had to be acceptance on their part of a condition. They all knew, or if they didn't know when they first came, they soon found out that it wasn't any bed of roses to which they had been led. That the farm, the making of a farm, required of her sacrifices almost beyond your imagination and mine.
The kitchen was so cold that, you know, you stoked the fires before you went to bed at night, and in the morning the water in the reservoir would be frozen.
And she used to say that once in a while, you know, that when she was little, that Indians used to come here.
When we got ready to wash, well, we'd fire up the kitchen stove and put the boiler on and pump the water out of the cistern, got ready to do our laundry. And then when we wanted to iron, we fired up the stove again and put the flat irons on the stove and carried them over to the ironing board and did our ironing.
Yeah, the oldest one, she come running, "Mother, Patsy's in the tub of water," and I run back. We just saved her.
My mother had no doctor when I was born. She had a midwife. Although children at that time might have been what we call now underprivileged, we didn't know it. We were happy, and we always had plenty of food. In 1900, my father got a farm up in northern Wisconsin, which was a rather primitive place at the time when we landed there. But the next summer, one of my uncles, who was a carpenter, built us a new house. And that was really a very lovely house, but there was no central heating, and there was no electricity, no running water.
There was six of us girls, and we all shared the bigger room and the two boys the other room. When I think of the house and the way she had to do with all us children, in her bedroom was very small, so they never owned a baby bed. It was like six chairs put together with a homemade mattress on top. As soon as we got big enough that we'd fall off of it, we were put in the upstairs part of the house. And there was three bedrooms, and one room was kept to store the seed corn and the mush rats that Dad would trap from the marsh. And we were very proud when the room hung quite full of furs in the winter, because that meant more money and a better Christmas. Uh-huh. Yeah.
There were seven of us. Yeah. In the winter, it was pretty cold, but there would be three in a bed also.
They gave birth to children without doctors, oftentimes without midwives. They lost children. They worked very, very hard to make the farms go. Well, I think we do view what women did in the last century as heroic. I think we view the whole process of settling the West as being particularly heroic. Americans have looked at the process of claiming a frontier, removing the Indians, bringing the land into production, as evidence that the American values work, of people being able to leave civilization, go out there, and through luck, pluck, diligence, and an enormous amount of hard effort, survive in the elements, survive the grasshoppers, the prairie fires, the blizzards, the droughts, the Indians, a whole range of personal tragedies, and do it on their own, without government help, without the help of society. I think we've always distrusted society. I think the farm women saw themselves as heroic. After all, they were the ones who made the real sacrifices. Their husbands chose to go west so that they'd have economic opportunity. For a woman, economic opportunity wasn't important. What she gave up was what women valued most, and that was civilization, societies of moral uplift, their church, their friends. And they went out west with their husbands, whom I'm sure they loved, and their families, and they were cut off from society. And we have all kinds of evidence that they faced a certain kind of brutal loneliness, a sense of real loss at having to go out there in that dissolute wilderness without their churches, without their societies, with their families, and facing hardships.
Loneliness was a terrible factor for many of these people. It was not easy to have a nearby neighbor ordinarily. Visiting was not possible.
They were involved with the home. At that time, the women were not chasing out and reforming the world.
There's many things about her life that I remember. I remember she took care of the chickens faithfully and carried the water off from the pump to the chickens. And in the wintertime also, she heated that water in her tea kettle in order to keep the water thawed for the chickens. She'd pour a tea kettle of boiling water in there. Drinking water, because overnight it would freeze.
When the hogs were, or the pigs were farrowing, why, she was so concerned. She would spend hours out there seeing that everything went all right, you know, and that there was dry straw in the pen for them. And
I'm not sure what the levels of personal happiness might have been, but they were heroic in certain aspects of life, notably in the care of the sick.
And Mom, the doctor told Grandma, would not live. She had it so bad. But the thing took a reversal. Her sister Frances died and she lived. And they took the coffin out of the window of the bedroom and buried the girl in the night. The mattress and all clothes and everything had to be burned. That was the only way they knew how to eliminate germs in those days. And as poor as they were with that big family, they had to destroy so much.
Unbelievably, there was a real feeling that women on those earlier farms were second-class citizens. I don't think there's any doubt that what they were supposed to maintain, the moral tone of their family, if they stepped out of line morally at all, they were terribly censured and punished for this. I suppose that the ordinary one of these early women on the Wisconsin farms would have been rather shocked if anyone had said to her, "I look upon you as a heroine." I don't think they really would have known what you were talking about. Most of them were very simple in their purposes, and their purposes were related to the welfare of their families, for the most part. Their own personal welfare was less important, although little by little, as they gained more substance and more security, I think that many of them developed feelings that they owed themselves a better kind of an image.
First of all, we're not settling the frontier anymore. And we recognize farmers now as participants in a market society. The other thing is we don't have that many farmers anymore. Only about 4% of Americans are farmers. There are a lot of people who grew up in cities and never meet a real farmer. And so they rely upon television, the media, and the trendsetters. I mean, their image of a farm woman is just relatively unattractive.
Yeah. When anybody ever asked me, you know, like, where you're from, what you ever did, and I was, you know, I'd come up with my farmer's daughter, and they it's like they're shocked. They kind of look at you, and they, right away, they have a concept of what they think of as a farmer, and they think of the way you live, and they can't, it is thought of as, it's a way of life, and it's a business. People don't think of it as a business, though. A lot of people don't. They more or less think of it as a way of life. It's more, it's both combined. It's equally a way of life as it is a business.
Farm women are very stereotyped, but not stereotyped as housewives, period. They're stereotyped because of farm women. They thought we were uneducated, not well-groomed, I should say, that type of thing.
And think of the farmers on television. You can have the noble type, like the Waltons.
Yeah.
But then you've got the Beverly Hillbillies. We've got, I think of Hee Haw, every farmer ought to revolt.
Thank you that way, because, well, like you get Dukes of Hazzards. I mean, look at the image it gives the rural people on there. It's really, it's different. And then the kids all of a sudden realize that farms aren't all that way. And there is, you know, it's a big business, and they're just normal like everybody else. Just normal people.
Farmers don't readily go into farming without a spouse to help, because it's a job in which two people apparently perform very, very well. And so you ask any farmer, he would find his wife's services invaluable, although I suspect he wouldn't value them the same as his own. Farm women cling to American values that we've always subscribed to. Fidelity, family, hard work. They see the modern women's movement is challenging some of those values, with their discussions of divorce, with their discussions of abortion, with their discussions of women being equal to men. They don't see themselves as equal to men, but complementary to men. They see themselves a reservoir of American values. And I don't think the women's movement has been able to suggest that it too has values that are relevant to farm women.
Farm women have always been liberated. They could do whatever they wanted to do. Liberated means, to me it means not only being able to do things on the farm, anything I wanted to do, but is to get away from the farm and do things other than everyday agricultural type work. That's being liberated.
This is the kind of machine that helped break down the isolation of farm women as it was widely adopted in the period between 1900 and 1930. Distances were great, and in the northern areas in particular, when the long, hard winters would further isolate women, this sense that they were cut off from the company of other women, from the company of other society, was a very sharp one. So that you would have, in the late 19th century, women would travel with their families literally 35, 40 miles by horse. That's an all-day trip then, at least, simply to participate in an all-night dance and then drive back and pick up their farm work again. The opportunity to work with other people
in barn building, any excuse for a social occasion was seized on as a way of getting out of this prison of the household and of the farm itself.
In terms of the farm household, which after all is the most important thing for the farm woman, she didn't get much until the 1920s. And what it takes essentially, I think, to liberate the farm woman, there are two things. One's the automobile, and the other's electricity.
When we got our first washing machine, it was quite an experience. My uncle was in the hardware business out in North Dakota, and he sent it as a gift. And it was a big wooden tub, and it had a handle on it that went back and forth. That was really modern living. But you still had to heat up the water. And then the next step, of course, was a washing machine with a crank on it. And then, finally, an electric washing machine. I remember my mother saying, wouldn't life have been wonderful on the farm if we could have had electricity?
Farm women tried in other ways to break down their sense of isolation. The Smith-Lever Act, in terms of creating the funding for county agents, you begin to get special home economists, as they were then called, attached to the county agent to provide special help to farm women. But it's the kind of role that farm women were all groping toward themselves and finding other ways of improving their lives.
We had this old Model T Ford car. The roof was off, and there wasn't much left of it anymore. But it was sitting in the yard, and I just thought it was there for me to drive, so I took it up the road. And my sister was along with me. She wanted to go to the neighbors, so I didn't know how to stop it, and I said, "Now I'll slow up and you jump." And she did, and made it okay. Well, then I went into the field, and I still didn't know how to stop it, but I drove in circles, and finally I hit the right pedal, and it stopped.
The automobile brought the chance to go to town more frequently on somewhat better roads that were available when we merely had horses and buggies. And it took women and entire farm families to town more frequently, to towns that were further away and that were increasingly exciting places to go. It brought them to the stores for a wider range of shopping opportunities. It brought them to the motion picture house on occasion. It brought them to more social events that were taking place in town.
What they really were after was making a living from the land. The women were there. And for the most part, they were an extremely strong and necessary part of the economy. I think the men realized this.
Mother was a sort of right-hand man for my father often. As he would be doing chores around, he would call in and call, "Mary, come on, give me a hand." And she would be, whatever she was doing, she would leave it and go.
When the threshing machine came in, we were always glad to see it come. And we're all equally glad to see it go.
Well, I never heard such a thing as woman's lib until, of course, these last years. My recollection of women in the early days was that the women were supposed to get the meals, were supposed to take care of the children. They were supposed to bring a lunch out to the fields for the men, middle of the morning and again in the afternoon. They were supposed to be ready at any time to help if help was needed.
That is a busy time, let me tell you. Usually butcher about the month of December, and because usually have beef and a hog, and we'd can maybe 100 quarts plus, and grind some of the pork and the beef together and make sausages and can that, which is pretty nice to take when you got unexpected company because it was always ready.
Well, we would have crews of 18 often, and it was fine for the noon meals because you expected them promptly at 12. A regular contest, it always seemed to the cooks to see which one could eat the most and the fastest. But the suppers were something else again because you never really knew when they'd be through. And farmers are not notably patient, so often they would come in a half hour before they were expected, and they would say, the grain's too damp, it's not shelling out. So there we were. So I really got a rustle on, as they say, got the meal on.
I have visions of my mother, you know, being very, very tired. And she remembered telling me that she was up on the wagon and she was pregnant. She fell off of that load of shocks. She was so worried, but everything was all right. But the farm women years ago did work hard. They had to survive.
I would say, if anything, women are more involved in the farm activities today than they were in the past. First of all, you cut a lot of the backbreaking labor out of farm activities. A tractor makes a real difference. A woman can operate a tractor much more easily than she can handle a team of oxen or a horse. And you can think of a whole range of farm tasks in which you've brought machines in. And we do have examples of women homesteading in the 1890s. I think it is possible that women collectively could run a farm today, where they probably couldn't have done it as effectively before.
When the thrash machine would come and we were children, we thought, oh, that was great. It was really fun, a very exciting few days on the farm, you know. But you never thought that your mom had worked and baked and cleaned like a week ahead of time to feed these huge thrashing crews, and your father had, you know, cut the grain with the binder, you know, and it all had to be shocked. It was fun to go out in the field with mom and watch her shock until we had to do the shocking with her. It's a totally different story.
Then it wasn't so much fun.
Then it isn't the fun concept is gone.
There is so much more machinery and stuff now than when we, you know, when I started. You know, when we got married and that, there wasn't hardly any machinery like there is now. There were small tractors and everything had to be more done by hand. Hay had to be hauled in by hand. There was, I don't think even they had balers when we first got married.
Farming is really nothing but a business. If you do not work off the farm and your total living must come from that farm, you had better look at it as a business and you had better be a very good manager.
Well, there's often a view that farm women are very shy, retiring drudges. I think there are other stereotypes about farm women in that they played relatively minor roles in farm enterprise outside of the home, that they were the equivalent of the city wife. While this too is not true, they were often full participants in farm enterprise along with their husband. Very often, particularly in the early part of our history, women were often the head of the farm enterprise for extended periods throughout our history.
You've got to be there every morning. There are no ifs, ands, or buts, whether you're ill, whether you're pregnant or what. There are no excuses.
You know, so you don't think about what you have to do. You just do it automatically. You think, well, it's my duty to do it. You know? And that's the way I bet majority farm women do feel.
You can never hire anyone to do the things that I do or our children do.
Well, I think you can think of the farm family as a collective enterprise in which all work together for the benefit of the farm. By and large, farm families are much larger than urban families. And a lot of it's related to the fact that the children are useful.
And the children become members of the entrepreneurial team very early in the game. Farm people, you just yank the pacifier out of the kid's mouth. If he can walk, he goes to the barn with a job. He has responsibility and he's accountable, he or she.
So my brother and I, we were part of the machinery, according to my dad, I guess. But we never got paid that I know of. I got a dime from him one time, and my brother got a quarter. And so that was, for the years of work, that's the only time that I ever remember getting paid at all.
So they start being responsible very early in the game. So we have to, when we talk about family farm, we've got to get this idea of family in our heads and not just farm, and recognize the farm woman as a career woman, equal basis with her husband, managing, running this farm, making the decisions, and taking the risks.
And my husband and I sat to the books, and we had to make a certain set amount per day in order to pay our cost of our loan. And so we had 54 stanchions. We had them filled with cows, kept buying enough to fill them a second time, to run this portion of the cows out of the barn and fill it a second time, which the farm truly wasn't set up for that. It made it hard, but we did it, and therefore we met our expenses continuously. But it was a never letting up. We were advised against it because we were going to go so deep in debt. Many people said, we'll never make it. Those kids are going to get snowed under, but we did take the risk. So there we had to spend very hard years of hard work, and my thought of farming then decreased from it being such a fun-loving place as just a very hard-working place. So from then on, I kind of lost my love for farming, and I wasn't as well and strong as I could have been. I had the strength to feel like we were going to make it, and the push and drive to help him mentally and spiritually, I felt we would. But I was not a real strong person that I could go out in the field and drive tractor and still take care of five children. I was pregnant with the number six on my farm.
When I have a particularly difficult day and I begin to think it's really hard, I think back on my grandmother and my mother. They've taught me discipline and hard work pays.
But the true farm woman that really helps and sits to the books with her husband and helps every decision that is to be made when we buy a new tractor, when we don't, and everything. There's so much a part of a big business world that a person in the city, their man goes off to probably a good paying job, and she goes to her clubs and this and that. There isn't that mending together like there is on the farm. It's just outstanding, that difference. And the one that does take a lot of responsibility, you can watch any farm where there's a responsible woman in the house, they're prospering quite a bit more.
In the early days of the century, money wasn't easy to come by, and farm women didn't have very much excepting what they got by selling eggs and selling cream or little products that they had on the farm. They used to make butter and sell too, but usually that was traded for groceries. My mother used to sell a pint of cream a day to the banker's wife downtown when we went to school in town. So every morning we would take a pint jar of cream, and it was beautiful cream, to the door, and then we'd find an empty pint jar there with a dime in it. Well, this had been going on for, of course, a long time, and my mother was gradually saving up the dimes. It takes a long time to get a jar full of dimes. It goes very slowly. I don't know what she intended to buy with it, but I know she had something in mind that she was going to get with those dimes. Then one day my father came in. He needed some money right away. Some farmer was there with something that he had to pay for, and I don't know whether it was a calf or some piece of machinery, but he came and said, I've got to have some money. Have you got anything here in the house? And of course, there was no money around the house, very seldom was. And he said, what about those dimes? And my mother looked shocked, and I can remember that very distinctly because my mother was usually very calm and quiet, but she had a look on her face that I noticed, and she didn't want to give up the dimes. But at the same time, if they were needed, of course, my father was going to have them, and so he went, got the dimes, which stood in a on the shelf in a jar, and took what he needed out of there. And I can't remember another time when my mother actually had tears in her eyes of disappointment, but that day she did. And she never said what it was she had planned to do with them, but I know that that was one time when she was bitterly, bitterly disappointed, and I never forgot the look on her face.
I think there must have been many instances when farm women had a secret cache of a little money that they put away and kept secret and might bring it out at Christmas time.
Mama always helped with milking morning and night. She did almost all the work that was to be done with chickens. And the money that came from those, she exchange for groceries at the village grocery stores. And if she had a little left over, she put it away carefully for some major thing.
That money for the wool, that was Ma's money, and that would buy a lot of things.
We always get them fresh from the coop. And I like I raise the chicks from little on, and I till they start laying. Then I kill off the roosters. And then I, before I put the chickens in the coop, I kill off the roosters. My husband always tells me I should get rid of them, but I like them anyhow.
Country people had little sayings that they were often used, especially can I remember my grandmother saying, whistling girl and a crowing hen will never come to a good end.
Well, years back, I mean, there was nothing, you know, like all that that goes on about women now. You know, there was nothing like that. Well, I don't know. I think you were more satisfied at that time because you didn't know any different.
I was always wanted to whistle when I was a girl. And Mother said, a whistling girl and a crowing hen is bound to come to some bad end. So I always think of that when I start to whistle. We had one pet hen that always crowed, but she lost her head.
I feel that farming today is so different from when my husband and I farmed that I don't know if we could even do it anymore, or even if I'd want to, because of the difference. It's like day and night difference. Now the farm wife, it seems to my estimation, she lives an entire different life. Many of them even work away from home, and they belong to possibly bowling teams. Well, in fact, I know of some that do, and it was little thought of in our day. It was 100% farming all the way. Or else, you know, you wouldn't make a go of it. At night you went to bed.
Yeah.
Played a little cards once in a while.
That's right.
I don't know how you feel about the I think the people were closer together, though, the husband and wife. My husband used to come in, and no matter where I was, he would say, "Where's Ma?" You know, it was just, he knew I was there, and I believe the father should be the head of the family. I think that would be, there would be less trouble. There's some reason for all the divorces, and probably that's one of them. Mm-hmm.
The farm wife has as much to say as the husband does. And maybe so, in a lot of cases, the woman would have a lot more to say. Because she's the one that's doing 75% of the work. Marcia won't like that one. Marcia's gonna like Becky. Is that good? You should hear some of the fights that go on around here sometimes. Arguments about who's gonna do what, what's gonna happen with what, you know, where money's gonna go. This loses out in the house, everything goes to the barn.
One thing, girls, I remember years ago when we used to ride around, take a Sunday afternoon drive, and you'd see these beautiful farms, especially a farm that had a beautiful house and the buildings all looked shabby. One of the famous things they'd say, "Well, you can tell in that house who wears the pants."
For sure. But if it wasn't for Joanne, I think you'd be back on that little 20-acre farm that they started out with. But Joanne has brought this thing up and up and up. Mars can be off with a broken leg, dislocated dislocation, an ulcer, and the whole thing, and the farm can keep running. But let Joanne be off sick for 1 week, and then you'll see the turn. Who can we get to help us? Who do we have to hire, Joanne? What can we do? You better get well.
The whistling girl and the fat sheep is the best dog a farmer can keep. You aren't going to use that, are you?
And no, I see how everybody works around here. My parents never get off. I mean, they never go away together hardly at all. And I like too much having when I walk out of a job, I want to be done for at least where I can take off sometimes. There's too much work around here. We've always got work. We're always doing something. I'd like to... As far as growing up on a farm, I love the farm. I mean, it's a good background. You learn a lot of things. A lot of stuff you wouldn't learn anywhere else. Like I go to school and I can tell everybody about what I've learned. But I don't know, I just don't want to marry a farmer. Don't like the idea of it at all. My mother always told me don't ever, ever marry a farm boy. Don't ever, because you'll be put on that farm and you'll be feeding chickens and pigs the rest of your life and you'll never get off.
An old Norwegian woman that used to tell about when she was young, and she said, "Well, you would never think to look at me now that when I was young I had so many fellows. They used to stand around me as thick as flies around a syrup can in the middle of the summertime, and I could have any one of them I wanted, and I never could make up my mind which ones to take. I didn't want to be an old maid for anything in the world, but I didn't find anybody but one old Swede. I guess I flied around too long. So I had to take him then, because I thought he was better than nothing. But I hasn't been happy one single day from that time. He wasn't good for anything. He had an old shack out on the prairie. It was so full of holes in the walls, the wind come in on the one side and went sousing right out through the wall on the other side.
I think farm women fear the individualism that is characteristic of the modern women's movement, that's characteristic of modern life. The way I look at it, see, a farm is a collective enterprise in which two people and their children produce outputs. It takes both. They see themselves as working together. They don't want to talk about my contribution and your contribution because they realize the contribution of both of them is invaluable.
Yeah, and some more jello.
What did you want to
do? Joanne always said she wasn't going to marry a farmer. She was the one that married the biggest one.
Yeah. But look, Lynette, the only thing, he got me under false pretenses. He wasn't a farmer when I agreed to marry him. Worked for Western Electric. We decided together, well, we could always make it farming. We knew that because we both had grown up on farms. So we bought our first farm. He and his dad bought our first farm, really. I hadn't seen it at all. He came and told me. But we milked the cows the day we signed the papers, 2 weeks before the wedding. We started milking our 17 cows by hand. We didn't even have milk machines.
They have a sense of identity, a sense of closeness that really is threatened by some kind of impersonal calculus that says, well, let's see, the farm woman, what's she do? She makes meals, she does dishes. She might even wash the dairy utensils. Might milk a cow, but I doubt it if he's around and the kids are around. At the going rate of wages, she doesn't earn very much. That's not the way they want to view their lifestyles. That's not the way the American farm works. It's an enterprise that's undertaken by two people. And it only works, and works well, when both contribute.
Well, they don't
want to
eat all.
Give me one of these.
Well, a new part of that history is being written presently. We have a new movement on, and that is a movement of women to organize, not from the point of artsy-craftsy, but from the point of getting back into the arena where decisions are made and risks are taken. All this function that she performed over the kitchen table, she is now being asked to go public with.
We just have to be in the go public. Today is La Crosse County's Farm City Festival. This is a way of promoting better rural-urban understanding.
Working together, we double our forces and can be a lot more effective in accomplishing our goals. Today's farmer represents less than 3%, 3.7% of the population. So you can see we definitely are a minority that needs all the support we can get.
The women's movement itself, I think, brought an awareness to the public that was never there before. The law says I'm doing nothing, whereas if we hired a man, he would get credit for earning an income.
Trying to deal with a farm woman, as far as a politician is concerned, is like, you know, braving a lioness with her cubs. You're on their home front. They're protecting the home front, and they're not apt to be pushed away very easily. They will have a persistence that is unbelievable, and there isn't a politician living who doesn't know that. If there is one who doesn't know that, I'm sure he's never been elected.
And if my husband would die, I would have to sell in order to pay the taxes. I couldn't afford to pay $30,000 and $40,000 or $50,000 in taxes and continue because I know what we have, the obligations we have. So I feel like this is very unfair.
I think we have to face the fact that a farm woman is, in every sense of the word, a career woman. Just like her sister in the city who, you know, goes to work and does things over and above her duties as a housewife, so does a farm woman do that. The only difference is she doesn't work from 9 to 5, and she does not commute. Her operation, the work that she does as a business, is right there in the same place as her home. So we've got to get rid of this stereotype of the farm woman as a dumpy, you know, frowsy person who probably wears, you know, a moo-moo-type clothes and probably stockings are baggy or whatever, the kind of a housefrau image that they have, to realize they're pretty sharp cookies and they are career women.
I think myself, I deserve the credit, and everyone else, all women deserve the credit that is due to them. We not only have
farm women are back in the public arena, and I'm very much in favor of what women are working for now, and that is no taxes between spouses. This is a business proposition, and I think the basis of that idiotic legislation we have in the books now is the fact that the farm family for all the pious rhetoric that's written about it, is not recognized as an entrepreneurial team running a farm.
It's a wonderful place to raise children. They learn a lot that the city and town children don't get a chance to learn. And I think they learn to work more so than the town children. You're close to nature, and there's something beautiful about the countryside anyway.
Walking to country school was an education in itself. Like we would pick black haws, wild grapes, wild plums, thorn apples on the way home. So it was an Eden in a way, a real little glory of nature with flowers and leaves and little animals. There were so many natural things for us to be interested in.
This reminds me of the barn that my sister and I came out of one night. We had to pass a cow that always kicked at me. I was always afraid, and I always held my breath to make myself as thin as possible to get past that cow. Well, this night, my sister went through all right. I came behind, and I got through all right. Then we heard Dad getting it from old Bess. We heard the cream jar break, and they expected any minute that Dad was going to come and beat Bess good. That's what we wanted, because she had to have that lesson. We stood there and laughed, because it was going to be our reward. Well, finally Dad came behind and never said a word, never said a cranky word to even Bess. So we never said no more. We went home, did our homework, and went to bed. The next morning, we awoke to hear the telephone ringing, the old-fashioned telephone. It was Dad. "This is Emery. I want to ship a cow."
And in my childhood also, we lived in an area where there was a woods in the back. And you know, nowadays you don't hear whippoorwills, but at that time it was a bird, the whippoorwill. And we'd wait for that whippoorwill to show up every spring so we could remove our long underwear and go barefoot. And we couldn't do that until the whippoorwill was whippoorwill, whippoorwill.
How about it? Do you folks feel the same as I? I never one day regret that I have had farming as my background, because that was many happy days. I don't remember, we know that we all had hardships and so forth, but they don't stand out. It's the beautiful things about living on the farm that does.
Well, I agree on that 100%.
I wouldn't want to live it all over again, but wow, it sure was fun when we were kids.
We grew up here. We were born and raised here.
Oh, but what would we do in the city? They don't have cows in the city. I don't like the city.
It's all right. Somebody's got to live in the city too.
Yeah, but it's better to live in the country.
No, there ain't no harder milking cows by hand than this to wash a milking machine. You only have one pail to wash this way. And what I like about this, these big farmers, these guys that got like 100 cows when they can't milk. They don't know how to milk cows by hand. Of course, they couldn't milk 100 cows, I suppose, by hand, but it would help. If they knew how, they could start in one end. Of course, they got pipelines and all such gadgets. I don't think hard work hurts anybody. Maybe make them tired so they can sleep better. They got lots of things to be thankful for. Well, that's electricity. And when it come through, boy, I tell you, everybody was grabbing for electricity. Now if the lights go out or the power quits, that's the first thing to hit first the REA office in Baldwin to see why. What happened to the juice?
I just don't know.
I suppose they have to wait till it comes back on.
If they got a lot of cows, I suppose they have to wait, but they say it's 2-3. If it comes a power shortage, then what? No, I don't think there is. I don't think there's many people that know how to milk a cow.
I don't think hard work hurts your health. Because you get, like us, we're outside a lot, so we get plenty of fresh air. I don't think we're not sickly. I don't think we might have a few aches and pains, but that's, you know, it comes to everybody sooner or later.
All plowed fields took on a look of clouds. At the horizon they meet and merge, silvery scale the furrows with mackerel sky. Across snowy span where moonfield and sunrise blend, the ageless lover touches contours of eastern mounds. My own quickened to pain of other days that foretold each new life in me. The fourth season is set to our carriage, is a wheel that creaking round brings dull color days as it turns. Passengers, cradling the dream, outliving reality, we travel into illusion.
Maybe it's the independence, or maybe it's that you feel like you are doing something and that you have done it with your own hands.
It's a serene type of feeling I'm sure you'd never get in a city that you have out in the country. And I get a very fulfilled feeling from working hard. The harder I work, the better I feel about myself personally.
What they were after was making a living from the land. The women were there. They were an extremely strong and necessary part of the economy. They were not very complex people. I don't think the complicated ones survived very well. The ones who had simple points of view, simple value systems, self-pride, and a great deal of personal, spiritual, and physical strength were the ones who made it. And of the two things, physical and spiritual, I believe I would have to put spiritual strength as first.
I don't think I've been unusually strong, but I've lived a long, full life, and I suppose it takes strength to do that. I just tried to fill my place in life as best I could. Didn't plan to achieve any great things, and still hold on to what I had. It's hard to explain. Just came naturally. The work and everything was right before me, and I went about it and did the best I could with it. That's about all that you can do. And I think your mother did the same way.
The preceding program was made possible by a grant from the Wisconsin Humanities Committee, with funding provided by the National Endowment for the Humanities.